Good afternoon. I apologize if it feels like I'm rushing you. I think the room is boiling with issues and questions, and we want to enjoy all our time with Lyle Oberg. But before we get into that, let me tell you that next week's speaker is Mark Norris. And for those of you who wonder about political balance, there'll be a variety of speakers from different parties over the next few weeks and months, but we're enjoying the chance to talk to some of the leadership candidates. And so Mark Norris will speak next week. I just apologize for the room, by the way, in our cramped space. That's the decision made by the restaurant, not by the Council of Public Affairs. So I'll call Lyle to the microphone and remind you that come to the mic up here, because we want this to be covered by the television, and give your name and be brief.
Sure.
I don't get the name of being brief. Mr. Moderator and Dr. Oberg, it's a great pleasure to welcome you here. As someone who's been associated with this council for 40 years, we don't often see cabinet ministers here as our guests. Apparently they feel that we are not good people and that they eat up cabinet ministers. I look around, they're lovely people.
You've been here four times.
Good, yeah. Good, we're lovely to have you come back again as premier.
Thank you.
I'd like to ask a question about Medicare. And thanks for beginning that and making an extended statement. I went to the to the internet, your site on the internet. So what I want to quote to you is what you're saying there about private enterprise and private for profit medicine. You're asking for top quality system blending public access and private enterprise. No. You know, and I know you can't walk down both sides of the street at the same time. And the blend of those two has not worked in the United States, where it has been a colossal failure, or in England or elsewhere around the world. Of course, it's a complicated subject. It all depends what you mean by private and what you mean by public. And another place you say, in order to protect the integrity and quality of the public system, doctors should spend a certain amount of their time with the public system. Indeed they should, if they're being paid by the public system. So the question I want to put to you, with great respect, as a doctor, wouldn't you say that most doctors, like the rest of us, care about their income? And we know that the income is substantial in the private system, they're going to go there. And who is going to benefit in the public system from that? Or to put it from the point of view of the client, of the patient, if Mrs. Brown has a brain tumor, and Mr. Black has a brain tumor, are they going to go into some public fair or some circus someplace to see if they can find a deal or a time or something of that kind? No? They're going to be paid by the public system. Yeah. So those are the kind of questions on our mind. And we're grateful for your reply. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for the question. And I'll just start off by refuting a couple of things. And first of all, that is about the socialized system in Canada. There are three countries in the world that have exclusively single-payer systems or socialized systems. Do you know where those three countries are? Canada? Where else?
Cuba?
Where else? North Korea? France? Sweden? Norway? The UK? Germany? All have the duality of system, all have the dual practice system that I was actually talking about. And I agree with a lot of what you said. I think the key thing here is that you have to have physicians available in the public system. And we have the ability to mandate that 75% of their time must be spent in the public system. And we have that ability to do, such as in the same way that France and Germany and all of these other countries. The other point I will remind people is that we are about number 25 or number 27 on countries when it comes to healthcare indicators. We're number 2 when it comes to spending money on healthcare. So we have a lot of improvements that we can do in the system. What I'm suggesting is that we take a very close look at what is happening in other countries and emulate what is happening in other countries rather than emulating what is happening in Cuba and North Korea. We need to repatriate some of the dollars back into our system, which is what is happening now You all know people that are going down to the United States, that are spending their dollars in the United States, and in reality, we're putting our head in the sand if we think that isn't happening, because it is. We need to put those dollars into our public health system. We need to have a strong public health system. The other comment that you made about the brain tumor thing, that's why I'm having access guarantees. Because quite simply, if 6 months isn't right for you on your particular procedure, if that's what the access guarantee is, if that isn't right for you, then you should have the ability to choose to have it done earlier. You should have the ability to pay for it, but we as the public should not pay for it. And that tends to be the philosophy that I'm putting forward here today.
Art Sanford, Dr. Oberg, just as a quick lead-up to the question, I should tell you that, according to the City of Edmonton, the City of Lethbridge enjoys the highest property taxes of any city in Alberta. Now, one of your platforms you announced earlier was that you were going to give all of the school tax over to the schools and municipalities. I believe the split was 75-25.
That's right.
Over a two-year period. I'm wondering if you consider the implications of giving the City of Lethbridge, for example, an increase in taxation of about 65% over 2 years. If you think we have a problem with inflation and trying to find hired staff today, I mean, the spending will go wild. And I think, you know, that's an idea that is not going to fly very well for the private industry. As it is now, they can't find workers. Once they get that kind of money, there's going to be wild spending. The staffs are going to be looking for 10 or 15% wage increases every year. So maybe you need to address that.
Sure. A couple of things, if I can. Part of my platform is to for the provincial government to get out of the education property tax and to give 75% of that over to the municipalities and 25% over to the school boards. And I'll deal with the 25% to the school boards in a second. With the 75% over to municipalities, what I would be doing is eliminating the small grants that are out there, the street improvement grants, a lot of the grants that they get, to take away that paperwork, to take away that bureaucracy from the municipalities. I think that you have two choices when it comes to municipal governments. Either A, you believe in them, and or B, you don't. And quite simply, if you believe in them, you have to give them the power and the ability to run their particular town or city. If you don't believe in them, then get rid of them. I believe in them. I believe in grassroots democracy. I believe in school boards. I believe in municipal governments. You, as members of Lethbridge, have the ability every 3 years to vote out your mayor, to vote out your alderman, to vote out the people that are making the bad decisions. I think that they have to have room to fundamentally run their town or city, run their municipality, but they also have to have the ability, they have to have the financial capability to do it. There's nothing stating that they have to take up that 75% of tax rate. They are going to have to go back to you and say, we're having this increase, and this is what we're going to spend it on. So that's one thing. The second thing is the school boards. And what I'm suggesting is that we put 25% of the school tax back to the school boards for capital construction, for capital issues, for capital items. When I look back in 1993 and 94, I think we made a mistake in government. And I was one of them. I completely confess, I was one of them. But I think we made a mistake in taking all the funds and pooling it all together. We had to do it on the operational side because we had school boards that were spending $3,000 a student. We had other school boards that were spending $20,000 a student. And that was simply because they had a pipeline or a plant on their particular facility or in their municipality. So we had to do that. I think we should have left the capital construction, though, on for the school boards to take, give them that tax room in order to do it. So that's where I'm coming from. I think it tends to be more a philosophical discussion than an individual city discussion. I believe philosophically that the municipalities should be the ones running their business in their particular towns and cities. I believe that we have to have a defined set of roles and responsibilities for governments. Where we run into trouble is when we cross those roles and responsibilities, such as federal government and us and the cities.
Thank you, Dr. Oberg. And I will put in a little bit of a plug, unsolicited. As a school board member, I found Dr. Olberg, as Minister of Learning and Minister of Infrastructure, very easy to work with. When you invited him to come down, he would come down. And my short story is, a call St. Mary's on 20th Street South. We were funded by the bureaucracy just simply to replace the heating and air handling systems there. We thought that wasn't good enough for a 50-year-old school. We invited Dr. Olberg down, and he held an impromptu press conference at the end of the tour when we toured him around the school, and he said, "I support this project." Within a couple of months, we got an extra $2 million, and that renovation's happening right now. So, my name is Chris Spearman. My question for Dr. Olberg really does revolve around the education taxes. I don't believe the municipalities should get any more money. They've been getting windfall revenues from utilities through electrical deregulation, through the increase in the price of natural gas. And I don't think there's enough accountability by municipal organizations, specifically cities. And I guess as a Catholic trustee, I'm really careful about my constitutional right. It was our school board that was the defending school board of the Supreme Court of Canada through the 1990s to retain that right. We were successful, and I want that right to mean something, and I wouldn't like it to be diminished. So if you could tell me how my constitutional right's going to be protected in your proposal, I'd be interested. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chris. And the point, again, I'll reiterate about the municipalities, is we would actually be eliminating a lot of the grants that go to the municipalities. So the actual amount would be very close to a saw-off on our other, because our other grants would be eliminated. So what we would be doing is eliminating a huge amount of the bureaucracy and administration that the municipalities have in dealing with the provincial government. So it would be a defined role. With regard to your rights, you would actually have more rights because people would be able to check where their taxes are actually going, and they would know that it would go directly to your school board then. So you would now be, actually more of your constitutional rights would be available now under this direction. They would still check, and their dollars would then go to the capital amount in your particular school district. What happens today is they check whether or not it's for the Catholic or the public school systems. It goes up to Edmonton and then realistically is redistributed back according to a formula. And it has nothing to do with how much assessment is putting the money towards the Catholic system or the public system. So I really feel, Chris, that this would actually allow for more of your constitutional rights than it was before.
Thank you. Dr. Olberg, thanks for your presentation. I'm Trevor Page. I'd like to know what your position is on the exclusion of opposition MLAs from policy committees.
On roughly Tuesday of next week, if all goes well, I will be releasing a policy paper that will include all party committees, that will include all party committees on presentations and policy decisions. It will... Hello? Hello? Sorry.
I can hear you.
Okay.
Carry on, then.
That's all that counts.
It will, however, we still will have to have budgetary committees for obvious reasons that are exclusively government. We will have to have legislation committees, which are exclusively government. But I will be putting forward a paper coming out next week that will include all party committees.
Kind of turns on and off.
Hi, my name is Tracy Edwards, and I'm president of Lethbridge Community College. We miss working with you in infrastructure. We enjoyed your tenure there with us. My question revolves around the skills shortage in Alberta. We are pedaling hard as a college system and a technical institute to meet the needs of our Alberta companies in terms of skilled trades workers. We're very proud at Lethbridge that over the years we do both pre-employment and apprenticeship training and have never turned an apprentice away. But we could do more, and we're wondering what your vision is in terms of helping us meet the skills shortage.
You're not going to like what I'm going to say, purely because my sister's boyfriend is an apprentice and you just turned him away. So So the point, though, we have an excellent apprenticeship system in Alberta. Presently, we have about 54,000 apprentices in the apprenticeship system. We're increasing by a number of 100 per day today. So we're seeing a huge amount of apprentices that are in the system, which is fabulous. We need to continue that on. But what we also need to do when it comes to the labor shortage is we need to ensure we get into those people who are not typically finishing high school and are not typically involved in the skills. We need to get into the Aboriginal population. We need to get into the disabled population and train these people for the jobs and offer the jobs to them. That's number one. Number two, we've got to ensure that Canadians get the jobs here. Canadians who want the jobs come here and are allowed to have the jobs. But number three, if the first two don't make it, number three is we do have to have an immigration system that will bring in workers that allow our workers to be here. And I'll give you an example. One of the issues in immigration is that when people come here and you receive a landed immigrant status, so you'll hear leadership candidates talk about immigration. They'll talk about giving the provincial nominee program, the leadership or the provincial nominee where you get a landed immigrant status. The problem with that is with landed immigrant status comes that's hard in the ears, comes mobility. So what you see is there's nothing stopping someone from bringing in a foreign worker, giving him the landed immigrant status, and then having that foreign worker evaporate to a different province. And for your information, 85% of all immigrants who come to Canada go to Toronto, Vancouver, or Montreal. What I'm proposing is that we give out what are called temporary work visas that have the equivalency of 3 years. So people can come here for 3 years, they can work in the job, but they can't leave Alberta. They can't go to work elsewhere in Alberta. They must stay here. If they leave, they go back to where they came from. If the economy turns down, they go back to where they came from. Because it's no different than if you were to go to Toronto for a job, and when your job is done, you move back home. So that is exactly what I would be proposing on the immigration side. The other issue is that institutions like yours would go over to the country and actually certify their skills. So you can't simply write on the bottom of your immigration form, I am a welder, and come over here and expect a job in welding. You have to have your skills certified. And you guys do that often, and you can do it very, very quickly. So I would suggest that the NAITs and SAITs and Lethbridge Community Colleges and that of Alberta actually physically go to the country and certify the worker in that country. And if you think that I'm just making all of this stuff up, this is actually the exact agreement that I did for Fort McMurray when I was Minister of Immigration, and I did that in the year 2004. So it can work, and it certainly will work, but we have to use our heads when it comes to immigration. Last thing that I want to say is we have to remember that the majority of people in this room, that either their fathers or their grandparents or themselves were immigrants, came from other countries. We came to Alberta because it was the land of opportunity. Alberta today is the land of opportunity as well.
Hello, Dr. Olberg. I'm Diane Pointer, a retired nurse, a longstanding member of Friends of Medicare. I'm afraid that I have disagreed with much of what you have to say regarding health care, but my question is, I did hear you say that you support grassroots government, the city council's elected boards of education. What about democratically elected health care boards? I want to know where you stand there.
I agree. And I'll actually go one step further. I actually put action to my words. When the health boards were appointed, if you remember what occurred is we had an election, right, and we had people elected, and then we had the appointments occur, and the MLAs were allowed to put names in. In my particular area, I only put the names in of the people that were elected. And one of the people, for those of you who are partisan, one of the people who was elected was very much an active liberal. Okay, and I still put his name forward because he was democratically elected for the hospital board, and I put his name forward, and he still sits on the hospital board.
My name is Corey Van Ray. Thank you, Lyle, for coming here. My question is about ethanol, and you touched it already in your speech a little bit. At the moment, the U.S. is geared to have 119 plants going by the end of the year producing ethanol. By the year 2010, they're gearing up for a quarter of the fuel burned would be ethanol-based. My question to you is, Lyle, and you say, it sounds like you're supportive of it. U.S. Basically supports ethanol production to the tune of about 51 cents a gallon. So if elected, Lyle, my question to you is, would you put us on a competitive base, in other words, support us, either by subsidies or guarantee a price, so we could be totally competitive as the U.S.? And by the way, ethanol production probably would be, it's a win-win-win situation. It's a win for farmers, you would get more for the grain. It's a win for livestock industry, so we can stay competitive. And it's a win for environment. Thank you.
Thanks, Cor. The short answer is yes. I do have one problem, though, with what they're doing in the United States. And what the problem is, when it comes to ethanol, there is still more energy going in to producing a liter of ethanol than is coming out the other end. And I think that that is going to change. I think technology, there's a lot of great things happening in technology on the ethanol side. That's one of the reasons why I talked about biodiesel, because biodiesel doesn't do that. Biodiesel has less energy in to make the biodiesel than it has coming out. I agree completely with everything you said about the biofuels. Bioethanol, biodiesel. Biodiesel is ready to go now. Bioethanol, I don't believe, is quite ready to go yet. There's still some significant issues. What I would be prepared to do, though, as I mentioned, is mandating that a certain percentage, and I've said 5%, but that can change, 5% of diesel fuel would be biodiesel. The other side is I would be prepared to take the 9 cent a liter tax off of the portion of biodiesel. So that in itself would give it a very large step up. I would also be prepared to help with incentives to get the crushers going in order to get the technology, to get the infrastructure there, very much the same way the U.S. did. Again, though, I must say, I do have a little bit of a problem with what's happening in the U.S. because I'm not sure it's that energy efficient at this point in time. There's some wonderful, wonderful research that is being done that is actually producing ethanol and biodiesel, not from the seeds, but actually from the stock of the plant. And I think that's going to be the future, where we can still get the seeds, but the stock of the plant becomes what is going to be utilized for the biodiesel. So that's why I believe that I think that there is a light on the horizon. And I think we certainly have to move in that direction. And as Premier, I would push that to a large degree. I think that that is very much a future that we have in agriculture in Alberta.
I'm Howard Forsyth. This is very impressive. I hope you go clear to the top, except for Kevin Taft. And I think you're thinking clearly about nearly every problem we've mentioned. Here's one for you that you haven't said much about. It's taken me 94 years to know for sure that women have more superior categories of intelligence than men and should immediately, worldwide, get gender neutral into top management of every position on the face of the planet. Now, if you can take this one, you might be Kevin Taft.
Well, thank you very much. And typically, I don't sit on the fence, but I will in this one. The one point I will make, though, in all seriousness, I was minister for 9 years. I was minister in the government for 9 years. And of those 9 years, seven of the years, I had a female deputy minister. And her and I got along extremely well. We did a lot together. I have always brought up females according to their attributes as opposed to their gender. It was according to their skills as opposed to their gender. Get your mind out of the gutter. I meant skills. Skills and attributes, right? But the issue is, I agree with you. And actually what you see in my campaign, and Carrie Milder is here, who's my chairman in Southern Alberta, what you see a lot of in my campaign are women who are involved in my campaign. And they're wonderful to work with, and they tell me what to do all the time. So it's great. So thank you. Thank you for your comment.
Bob Anderson.
Bob Anderson. While we really blew it on that last question, see how you can handle this one. I would like to speak about the Chinook Health Region and my experiences with it and reports from others. I was there for knee surgery a couple of years ago. I can't think of anything that wasn't efficient, well-managed, prompt. It couldn't have been better, a better experience for me. I've spoken with many others that have had exactly the same experience. They could use more operating rooms, because they're specialty kind of operating rooms, and more physicians, not less, by having some of them drained off into the private system. There's lots of opportunity for them to work within the public system. I can't for the life of me see the advantage of draining off doctors from the public system into the private system. I can see absolutely no advantages to that at all, except an increased income for doctors. And they're not all in the profession for altruistic reasons. If a person wants to spend their own money and go to the United States to have a holiday or do whatever they do, God bless them. That's their money. They can spend it where they want. If they go in the hospital and do something, that's fine too. If they go to India for major kinds of replacements and so on, as many people do, that puts money into their health system. That's a good thing. I don't think it's a bad thing for them to leave the country and do it. We don't have to hold on to everybody and their money. But I do think there is absolutely no point in doctors practicing in the private system and receiving any public monies. It's not something that I like. And our system here, it would need more rooms and more physicians, but they're efficient. The private system couldn't make it any more efficient.
First of all, a couple of things. I agree with what you said, that people should have the ability to pay, but they don't have the ability to pay in Canada. They don't. They have the ability to go to the United States, they have the ability to go to India, but they cannot do it in Canada. And fundamentally, I have a problem with that, because fundamentally, I believe that that economics should be done in Alberta. It would be no different than saying that we should just ship all our raw resources to the United States and allow it to be done there. I believe that that economic should be in Alberta, should be allowed in Canada. The second point is about operating rooms. We don't need more operating rooms. We have lots of them. We need to work them longer. The average length of time an operating room is open in Lethbridge, I would bet, is from 7:30 in the morning till 3:30 in the afternoon. There's plenty of other times in the days that those operating rooms can be open, so we don't need more operating rooms. When it comes to physicians, the number one issue with physicians is that they don't receive enough operating time. And I completely agree with you that physicians should be in the public system, and that's why I stated that you must spend so much of your time in the public system as opposed to simply moving over to the private system or the pay system.
Why not all of it?
Well, because all of what is happening is we are getting more and more and more lineups. We are not allowing them to do it, and we're paying more money. Quite simply, we're now at $10.5 billion a year. We've tripled in the last 12 years. If you do the economics, if you plot out the economics, we are not going to have enough money by the year 2009, 2010. So quite literally, You've got to take a look at the economics. You've got to see what is happening around the world. And let's just say that people in France, people in Germany, people in the UK do not necessarily have it wrong. And I think we have to open our minds to this. We cannot simply accept what is happening now, because it isn't going to be there. 3 years or 4 years from now, we're going to have to make some tough decisions. If we continue on the way we are, we're going to make tough decisions. With regards to physicians, I had the opportunity of attending an Alberta Medical Association luncheon on Saturday. And I talked to several of these GPs from Calgary, not from Chinook, not from this area, but from Calgary. And these were GPs who did not have hospital privileges. But they were telling me, and I have no reason to dispute it, they were telling me that their net income was under $100,000. So they could go out and do any job they wanted, as opposed to having the responsibility and all the obligations of being a medical doctor. So that is the important thing here, is we are funneling down when we aren't necessarily paying the people who are looking after us under $100,000. I had a person in Fort McMurray who came up to me who was cutting grass and helping at the Suncor fire, who was 17 years old, and received a T4 for $140,000. We have to take a very serious look at what is happening in healthcare today, because quite simply, if we don't, the consequences 4 years out or 5 years out are very detrimental to all of us. And in the perfect world, would healthcare be absolutely free? Yes, absolutely, categorically. But there are realities that there are other issues in government as well. There are costs that have gone up. There are roads that need to be built. There are hospitals, there are schools, all of these other things, which is the balancing act that we have to do. And what I am putting forward, quite simply, is that if you choose, keyword is choice, if you choose to pay for your health care, that you have the ability to do it, and if you do not choose to pay for your health care, that you have a better public health care system to look after you. Our public health care system is excellent once you're in it. The issue is getting in it. The issue is the access. If you have an emergency, if you're driving home today and are involved in a car accident, I will put our healthcare system up against anyone in the world. Against anyone in the world. The system, though, the issue is access. I don't believe that waiting 2.5 to 3 years for surgery is good healthcare. And that's where I'm coming from, is from healthcare and from economics.
John McIntyre. We've heard quite a bit about health care, a little bit about education. One thing the Conservative government has done recently is deregulate electricity, particularly in the south, where we have irrigation farming. It's just an added cost that a lot of folks can't use. I won't say they can't bear it, but I was wondering if you could address that.
Certainly. First of all, energy deregulation occurred about 7 or 8 or 9 years ago. And what was actually deregulated was the generation cost. And what we have seen since that time is the generation cost go from a high of around 12.5 cents, I believe, per kilowatt hour at one time, to I believe it's down to around 6 to 6.5 cents now. So what we've seen is it dropped down. Where people have problems, and I fully understand this, is in the other charges that are on the bill. You've got transmission charges, you've got all the other charges that are out there. The issue that I have is those are still regulated. The problem that I had with the regulated system is that it was a cost plus system. So you had the generators who realistically had a monopoly that for every dollar they put out in expense, they received $1.12 back. So there was no incentive to be efficient, which is what we want in our power generation. We want efficiency. There was no real obligation nor ability to expand. We went through a period of time in Alberta where we did not see any new power being brought on. We are now in a position in Alberta where we have, southern Alberta, we have a little over 200 megawatts of wind power, which is great. There are 900 megawatts that are underway, and there's a potential for $2.5 billion investment into wind power in southern Alberta, which is huge for our economy. It's huge for our farmers that have wind turbines on their farms. So that's one thing. We're seeing a lot more in alternative energy. We're experimenting a lot with biomass energy, biomass electricity. All of the good things that are happening are now able to happen. Is energy deregulation, was it done well? Was it done smoothly? I think if I said yes to that, you would probably crucify me, right? I think there were a lot of mistakes made. But I think it is accomplishing, as opposed to has accomplished, it is accomplishing what we had wanted, which was more diversity, more energy being brought on, more sources of energy. What we have to remember in Alberta, that we don't have hydroelectric power. And hydroelectric power is by far the cheapest source of power that can be brought on. So we must burn fossil fuels, typically coal, which is about 65% of our electricity right now is coal. Natural gas, where we see the fluctuations in the market, which is what is causing it, but we are diversifying. Very quickly, one of the issues was that we allowed taxpayer-owned utilities to compete on an equal footing with investor-owned utilities, meaning that the investor-owned utilities had to borrow money. Taxpayer-owned utilities could back it with tax dollars. And that was probably one of the fundamental mistakes that was made in deregulation. So we need to continue to work on deregulation. We need to continue to work on getting more energy on. We need to continue to work on more transmission lines, especially in southern Alberta. But overall, it has accomplished some things, but it's still a work in progress. And as Premier, I would ensure that it is a work in progress in the right direction. I think it's too late to go back and re-regulate because I don't want to see companies with a cost plus 12% built-in profit. I really don't.
I'm Cosmos Butsinas, and my question is related to... my question is related to the issue where...
No? I don't think the mic is working, so really project.
Okay, I'm Cosmos Butsinas, and my question is related to the recent efforts made by some oil companies to ship to the U.S. untreated bitumen. And you have a position, and what is it?
Sure. My position, the question was, the question was that there's recently is an oil company that has announced they're shipping to the United States untreated bitumen, so non-upgraded bitumen. So it's a raw product that is going out. I believe that as the government of Alberta, we have to obtain the royalties on the upgraded product, not on just the raw bitumen. I am not in favor of shipping our raw resources down to the United States. I'm not in favor of having economics go down to the United States where they pay in the United States and not in Alberta.
My name is Ralph Arnold. My name is Ralph Arnold. I'd like to address something that has not been touched on so far this afternoon. It has to do with the youth in this province. Right now, when Lyle Wahlberg was in the learning minister, he instituted mandatory physical education in schools, and that was a nice plus. But as we're all aware, a lot of our youth are very overweight, very inactive. If the kids want to get active, they need to be able to participate in a lot of sports programs, which means their parents then have to work bingos. And bingos then goes into a lot of revenue for the province. I would like to see the Alberta government provide a system that allows every family to be able to send their kids to organized sports and not have to go break the bank to do it or do a bunch of bingos. And I'd like to see your position on that.
Sure. Thank you. First of all, I believe completely 100% in physical activity and physical education. I think it's absolutely critical. All the studies show that we should be doing at least 30 minutes of physical education or physical activity a day. And that is not necessarily badminton and basketball. It could be walking. It could be calisthenics. It could be anything. And that was the reason why I put that into the school system. You have to be careful on who you particularly subsidize in order to do that, because realistically, the kids that are overweight now are not necessarily going to go into the sports, the organized sports, that are out there. I believe that we need to expand the sporting facilities, the community facilities, and to that end, one of the policy platforms that I have, and we talked about municipal, but the municipal government could certainly do that, but another component of it is that 2% of the royalty revenues go back to where the resource came from. So 2% of the royalty revenues, which this year would have been $300 million, would go back to where the resource came from. You and I know that our resources come from not necessarily downtown Calgary. They come from rural Alberta. So what I'm attempting to do is put the money back into the communities so that they can build community facilities, that they can encourage community facilities, that they can encourage kids to become involved in sports. I'm a huge believer in it, but this is going to take a generational shift because there's a generation of kids out there who are not necessarily physically active now. That was why we started it in school, was to instill in them that physical activity is an extremely important part of life and that you must continue that on for all of your life.
We'll let the next questioner pose the last question.
Hi, I'm Linda Lathestone, psychologist. Thank you very much, Dr. Oberg, for being here so that we can ask you some of our pressing questions. I'd like to know how you're going to address, redress, the increased disparity between the rich and the poor in Alberta, which is the richest province in Canada and is richer than many countries on the planet. I would like to know when our legislature is going to get back to sitting at a rate which increases our democracy in Alberta. Right now we're in a democratic deficit.
Sure. First of all, I will touch on the second question first about the democratic deficit. What you have to remember is that there are lots of ways that you can sit in the legislature. And what is occurring right now when it comes to actual hours sat, we sit more hours than I believe about 90% of the legislatures in Canada. We don't necessarily sit the days because what is occurring, we sit many more hours per day. We're often there until 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock at night. So you have to judge it on the hours sat as opposed to the number of days sitting. Because in the many legislatures, they sit for 2 hours, 3 hours a day, and that is counted as one day. We will be sitting many times 8 and 9 hours and 10 hours a day. That's counted as one day. So just really be careful on the democratic deficit.
But that wears out the members of MLA.
I agree completely. Trust me, I know that. One of the things that I'll be bringing out next week is actually fixed legislative sitting dates. Okay? So you will know when we're sitting from the middle of February roughly until the end of May or the third week in May. You will know that. And that actually creates much more democracy because what I'm in effect doing is changing the control of the House from the government control to opposition control by doing that. Because the opposition then would have the ability to ask whatever bill that they want, call whatever bill they want to discuss. So you're not necessarily discussing for an hour the Beekeeper's Repeal Act, but you actually may be discussing for 5 hours healthcare changes. So that is one of the things that I will be doing. And I think that that has a huge benefit. So what we would be saying is a month before or 6 weeks before, there would be a motion on the floor that would say that every bill that is now sitting on the order paper would be passed as of the third week in May. So the opposition would then control which bills they wanted to discuss. So I think that that would go a long way on the democratic deficit. With regards to the rich and the poor, I believe very strongly in a hand up as opposed to a hand out. I believe that we should get people into the workforce. I don't believe that we simply give money to people. I believe that people have to work for money. That's what your parents did. That's what my parents did. That's what I did. And I believe that people should become good providing members of society. There's lots of ways we can do it, and there are some people that can't, but we can help. And we should be helping these people as opposed to simply giving dollars out here, giving dollars out there to decrease disparities. I have no problem with people who are successful. I think success is a wonderful word. I do not criticize anyone for being successful. I was at a gentleman's house on Saturday afternoon. It was a 10,000 square foot house outside of Okotoks. And quite literally, he had a grade 7 education. He started from nothing. His dad was blind, and he was kicked out of the house at about grade 7 or 8 to go and make a living. And he made a living and made lots of dollars and is very successful and is a wonderful person. I do not begrudge him one iota. He earned that. He is successful, and he is giving back to the community. So success is a good thing, and I think we recognize it. For people who are not as successful, we need to help them, not give them. We need to help them become successful.
Very brief, however.
Yeah. Notice he said people, but he means man. Rich and poor, strong and weak, and those others will be amended rapidly if you put women in the case to help make the decisions. You can work them both.
Thank you, Howard. Howard, I can't dispute that. I really can't. Next week is Mark Norris, but today let's thank Lyle Oberg for being our guest. Thank you.